Evening, guys. Hey, Rob, how are you, buddy?
Very well, thanks. It's a good morning here in Australia, but lovely to be with
It's
you.
cool in Australia. It's lunchtime, Eastern time. We're all over the place, Darren. It's 11 p.m. here in the UK, so I'm wanting what you've just had, which is some sleep. But how are you, my friend? You well?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, good, good. Hey, Matt. Hey, Des. Hey Darren, how are you boys?
Good, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, mate. How's things with the little one? Okay.
Yeah, good. He's
When do they arrive?
the next one arrives on the 27th of June. So find out it's a boy. So
Oh,
going
amazing, amazing. Dan Smith is a great name. It's
to
very
maybe
common.
call it now.
But Dan Smith is a great name if you and your wife are stuck for names, mate. Hey Jeff, hey George, good to see you boys. Hope you're all well. We'll just give it a couple of more minutes, boys, before we get started. So before we get started, you know what I like to do? Let's share some wins. So a couple of you guys come off mute and kind of how's things been going? Obviously, since you last heard from me, how's things been going the month of January and February and start to the year? Who's had a strong start to the year is going to share a couple of wins with us. As always, if no one unmutes themselves, I will pick you at random. So, a couple of you boys, let's hear from you. What's been going on? And I know you're in the gym, George, so I'm going to pick on you, buddy. How's things been since Costa Rica? How are you? I haven't spoke to you since Costa Rica. How's things?
Well, I put on 4 kilos and I've just been a bit more relaxed since Costa Rica. But in a good way. And I've leveled up my training. So
Good.
whenever I'm in the gym, I've got like 1 hour of laser focus. And that's what I took away from Costa Rica.
Good. Yeah, because I remember us talking about the gym being you time, right? And a time where you disengage from everything else that's going on in your life and focusing solely on you.
Absolutely. It's been good.
Yeah, that's good to hear, brother. Family and everything well?
They're all good. 18
Good.
year old, so last year of school, everyone is good, thank God.
Good, good, good. Well, that's great to hear, mate. Hey, Paul. Hey, David. Hey, Nat. Hope you're well, buddy. Right, boys, as we're ticking on, we'll get going. Okay, so there's a few things I want to talk about tonight. So, again, as you all know, you've seen the title of the talk tonight. It's rewiring your brain for strength, so success and lasting results. So, what this is due to carry on from. So obviously those of you guys that heard me speak last time, we went through the 1% mindset. So kind of it's an extension to that, but we're looking a little bit more at the brain today and just essentially kind of creating strategies for success. So you guys know I enjoy mindset and psychology. And for me personally, I think it's going to be a pivotal point of your guys' journey. And I think just understanding how to rewire your brain and using strategies to overcome barriers and challenges that have previously been set through a whole host of things. So it can be habitual, it can be trauma, it can be a whole host of new things. And I think what I would like to get from today is you guys to essentially understand your self-imposed limitations and hopefully turn them into strength. So I often use a phrase with my clients, you're as strong as your weakest link, right? But what a lot of people have trouble doing is identifying the weak links. And I tend to look at weak links not as kind of a negative. And those of you guys that have heard me speak before, I don't believe in negatives. There's kind of positives and there's lessons, right? And by understanding how a pivotal role, as well as your training, your nutrition, kind of the actions that you're instilling is your thought process and the thoughts that you go through is going to be vitally important to your progress in all the seven areas of life we spoke about in the previous talk. So we're going to move into the slides now. As always, I'm going to share my screen, boys. So if you have got a question, as always, just unmute yourself, pause me. I'll stop at regular intervals for you guys to ask questions. But if you do have any questions, I won't be able to see the text box. So just again, unmute yourself and just feel free to pop in and ask a question. So I'm just going to share my screen. So if you boys bear with me a second. Right, let me move that across. Can everybody see that okay? Just give me a thumbs up. George, Rob, Des, or Darren, I can see you for boys. Perfect. Cool. So as I said today, boys, the talk's about rewiring your brain for strength. Okay, so what we're going to look at and the learning actions for today are going to be as follows. So the power of the mind and how it influences performance, understanding a little bit of neuroplasticity. So we're going to look at areas of the brain that are responsible for certain actions like emotion, motivation, and those sort of things. So a little bit of science in there today. We're going to look at some practical strategies around kind of what we can implement, but also the little things that we can use, what we can identify as potential limitations within ourselves. I've got a couple of transformations of previous clients that kind of I just want to show you guys because, again, it's very easy for people to talk about theory. And having been in the industry for 20 years now, kind of, and there being a lot of coaches out there, I think just you guys having a look at a couple of transformations of mine and also kind of practical implemented bits and kind of a couple of transformation stories that I've gone through that highlight. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the journey both Luke and Jason went through psychologically. Then, obviously, as always, question and answer and final thoughts. So let's hop straight into it, boys. So the power of the mind. So I've started with a quote. Okay, so it's a well-known quote. You may have seen it before, but your mind is a powerful thing. When you fill it with positive thoughts, your life will start to change. So for me, what does this mean to me? So I think it very much relates to perspective and perception. So perception to me means the way in which something is regarded, typically how we understand and interpret things. So perception for me is a very powerful tool in day-to-day life. The reason for that is because quite often we can perceive things in a totally different manner that they've been sent. So those of you guys that use text messages, that use WhatsApp, how often have we sent a message to our nearest and dearest or somebody that we know and it be misconstrued? So that's not down to the fact that there's any in intent. It's just because the person receiving said message has perceived it in a certain way. Actions are perceived in a certain way. So for me, kind of trying to ensure that when you are kind of thinking of things, you're not just thinking positive because that's impossible, but we know as human beings, we are kind of negatively biased just from a protection mechanism. So I think being able to control what you allow in and what you give out is a powerful tool for me. So we all have the ability, and I say to a lot of my clients, the only thing as human beings we have control of is what's between our ears and what we allow into our space and our energy and what we give out. So understanding kind of what you typically, and I forget who it was, and I forget the quote, it's an old school book, but kind of you are a reflection of the five people that you spend most of your time with. It might have been Jim Rohn. That is true, and but it's also true with the mind. So the what you allow to infiltrate your thoughts and how you think about the things are gonna either have a positive or a negative impact on kind of your behaviors, your emotions, and how you're able to compartmentalize certain things like actions and thoughts. Okay, so our minds typically are going to allow us to rationalize things in a certain way that fits schemes and categories that we're accustomed to. So how I contextualize that is essentially we can act in certain ways because of previous habits. We can act in certain ways because of previous experiences. So again, it's important that we're able to decipher these and ensure that they don't come in and curtail what we're all trying to achieve, which is longevity and becoming the best versions of ourselves, right? So for me, kind of understanding how powerful your thoughts are is vital on this journey that you're all on in regards to whether you succeed or I don't like to say you fail or the journey takes a little bit longer than you perceived essentially in the beginning. Okay, so there's two parts to this. So obviously we've got mindset. So mindset to me is essentially kind of it's our beliefs and our thoughts we hold, which will dictate our actions. So a positive mindset for me and how we contextualize things are going to open doors the things like creativity, perseverance, and resilience. So I often say to my clients, like, negative emotions and thing ill willing and kind of, I don't like to use the word hate, but kind of, let's say, kind of resentment. They're very heavy emotions to carry. Okay. And if any of you guys are sat here that feel like you do resent a few things, you can't, there's a comparative element to what you see on social media and those sort of things. Those sort of thoughts are very heavy to carry. And what I believe is kind of they're going to essentially kind of curtail creativity and dampen down the resilience. We'll talk a little bit more about resilience in a little bit and the four resiliences Ben talks about. But for me, kind of, if we fill up our thoughts solely with heavy emotions and perceivably negative emotions, then it just dampens our creative brain and our ability to be logical around certain situations. And then the second part is the neuroscience. So for me, it's as I've learned a lot more about neuroscience, it's understanding the brain's not fixed. So it has the ability and it is constantly changing and adapting to different scenarios that's essentially put in front of you. So again, this concept is loosely described as neuroplasticity. It's kind of a buzzword in the industry at the moment. So for me, neuroplasticity is essentially the ability for the brain to form and reorganize things like synaptic connections, especially in response to learning or experience. And also it can change neuroplasticity following things like head trauma and those sort of things. But neuroplasticity, you hear a lot on a lot of podcasts that you listen to, but for me, all that represents is the ability of the brain to form and reorganize synaptic connections. Okay, so for me, when we form new thoughts and habits, we are literally rewiring our brain. This means essentially every time you adopt a positive thought or you begin a new practice, you're creating new synaptic pathways to help you achieve strength and the goals that you're trying to achieve. So every thought that you go through is going to be vital to change and allowing you to become the very best version of yourself. So understanding neuroplasticity and kind of everything that we fill our thoughts is going to either have a positive or negative response in other areas of your life, to me, has been proven true. And with clients that I've worked with in the past, has been proven very true as well. So be careful what you allow in, as well as be careful when you are on your own and you get deep into your thoughts, where your brain is going. And can we catch those perceivably negative thoughts before they happen and understand negative patterns that we're in and start to rewire and reframe those? So moving into the next slide, as I says, is a little bit more sciencey. So what I've done for you is I've kind of, from front to back in the brain, just looked at a few different parts of the brain that are responsible for certain actions. So we're going to start with the frontal lobe, which is obviously the front of the brain. We've got the prefrontal cortex. So it sits in that frontal lobe, and its function typically is going to be responsible for things like decision-making, planning, and maintaining focus. It will typically act as a control center to help guide behavior and goal-directed actions. And this sits right at the front. Then moving a little bit further back, we have the anterior cingulate cortex, which is abbreviated to the ACC. Okay, so this sits just behind or adjacent to the prefrontal cortex, typically the front of the brain. That function is typically it will monitor errors and conflicts, but it's also going to play a role in adjusting behavior and regulating things like emotional responses to situations. So then we're going to move a little bit further back, and these three are kind of intertwined, which we'll talk about in a second. But we'll start with the insula. Okay, so that sits within the lateral cortex part of the brain. And what that will typically do in its role and responsibility is to process bodily states and things like internal sensations. So what this will also do is link to emotional experiences and also can contribute to the awareness of emotions and help guide our responses. So this is going to be the part of the brain that essentially kind of from an emotion standpoint is going to be the most important. Then moving through to the hippocampus, it typically sits in the medial temporal lobe. So pretty much the side here of the brain. Again, processes, it's critical for forming and retrieving memories. So it can also help contextualize our experiences, not too dissimilar to the insular, okay, which can influence how we respond to current challenges. So again, the insular and the hippocampus kind of have similar roles, and then moving into the amygdala, again, it also sits in the medial temporal lobe, quite close to, in proximity to the hippocampus. And again, its function is going to be to process emotional response, particularly fear and stress. And it's going to play a significant role in how emotional memories are formed and recalled. So things like trauma, things like traumatic experiences are typically, again, the amygdala is going to be where that typically sits and is processed. Okay, and then moving through towards more so the back of the brain now, we move into the nucleus accumbens. Okay, again, this sits deep within the brain and forms part of the basal ganglia. Okay, so the nucleus accumbens essentially acts as a brain's main reward center. It's gonna typically release dopamine in response to re recording stimuli. So this will reinforce behaviors that lead to positive outcomes and motivation. So obviously, if we create with stimulate creating a stimulus and a positive stimulus, which we all typically will know the role of dopamine, is this is where it's going to happen. So it's going to happen in kind of deep in the basal ganglia, essentially around about the nucleus. Okay, and then the last part to the brain is VTA, which is the ventral tegmental arsa area, sorry. And this is typically sits in the midbrain and alongside the nucleus. It's going to be a major source of dopamine. So it's going to send signals up to the nucleus and to the prefrontal cortex to release dopamine. Again, it's going to play a crucial role in the brain's reward circuitry. So it underpins motivation and reinforces goal-directed behavior. So that's the overview of the part. So what I wanted to do alongside that is just so I don't lose any of you, is just look at how they work synergistically and what their roles are in things like focus, emotion, and things like motivation. So if we're looking solely at focus, we're going to be looking more so at the prefrontal cortex and the ACC. So they work synergistically to help maintain focus by managing things like attention and suppressing distractions. They'll also integrate emotional feedback from the amygdala and the insula to ensure that stress and negative emotions don't derail your concentration. Okay, so that's typically the focus role and responsibility. When we look at things like emotions, the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the insula typically will work together to process emotional experiences and memories. Their interaction, will influence how you react to challenges and, most importantly, to stress, which you guys all know how big we are here at Muscle Intelligence on stress, which again, so the role of the amygdala and those three parts kind of can either enhance or impair your ability to focus and stay motivated. So from an emotional side, it's the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the insula that work synergistically together. And then lastly, from focus and emotion, we move on to motivation. Again, the VTA and the nucleus kind of drive the motivational aspects. Again, going back to what I've just said in regards to the nucleus and the VTA, both of them are responsible for dopamine production. So in regards to the motivational aspects, what these parts of the brain will typically do is release dopamine when you experience something rewarding, again, helping us to reinforce behaviors that typically lead to success. Okay, so that's the overview of the brain, the parts of the brain that are responsible for kind of the rewiring, shall we say. Again, I haven't spoke about the importance of nutrition and adequate nutrition, because today I want to just keep it solely about kind of psychology. But again, we understand that a major energy fuel source for the brain is going to be something like fats. So kind of nutrition and also behavior and thought processes are going to play a massive part in allowing all these parts of the brain to function optimally and just allow them to move synergistically. So again, if we look at all the mechanics without looking at the brain in isolation, if we look at all the things that can impact this, poor training, poor lifestyle in regards to nutrition, kind of experiences, it can be situational, stress as a whole, poor sleep, okay, poor digestion. These are all major factors that can have an impact, a major impact on all these areas, working synergistically to create the brain's best state, to be focused, again, from an emotion standpoint, to be able to establish the right emotions in the correct scenarios, and also from a motivational standpoint, giving you the motivational to succeed. Not just the resistance and the strength element, but the nutrition and everything that you guys have going on in your day-to-day lives as well. So that is kind of the brain in itself. I'm going to stop there just because it can be quite heavy. Is there any questions that any of you guys have up until this point? No?
Good. I'm going to check in for a second, guys.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to ask, hey, guys, good to see everyone. My question is more related to, I guess, function around emotion, because what I do find for myself, I don't know if anybody else can connect to this, but as I've gotten older, I feel like I've had like some huge spike in estrogen, because everything emotionally upsets me. Like just for no reason, I could be watching TV wonderfully with my dog laying across the couch, doing nothing, and it'll be a commercial of a little boy getting a Christmas gift. And for some reason, and I'm not a sad person, don't get me wrong. I don't, my life's pretty good. So so with that being said, for some reason over these last few years, I've got heightened emotional states for no reason. And it's somebody else's situation. So I was actually, that's why I chose number one when you know, out of the list that was there, just because of the whole functional motivation, brain work, what have you. Because I mean, I'm testing lots of things related to what we're talking about tonight, just on myself, like motivational thoughts as soon as I wake up in the morning. You know, like before I put my feet on the floor, before I have my first meal, saying thank you for the food. Just not on a spiritual sense, but just on a honoring my new road sense, if that makes if that makes sense.
I love that. Yeah, it sounds awesome. And how are you getting on with all that?
Well, you know, I've actually just submitted all the requests from Greg to get all my blood work done. And one of the things I asked about was testing testosterone and estrogen and all that kind of thing that is within us, all the chemicals that are within us, or, you know, men and women, I should say. But all that being said, I haven't gotten any result yet. So I've just submitted it. It was something he asked for a little while ago, and it took me a little while because it was quite an extensive list that Greg had asked for. So we weren't sure whether my doctor would just, you know, generously say, I can do that for you. But he has. So as soon as I know more about numbers, I'll be able to say, well, I think I figured a couple of things out just on a level of my blood work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was going to be my first question, Darren, was have you had your blood done? Because I know you mentioned about estrogen and testosterone earlier on when you first started speaking.
Absolutely. I'm pretty convinced that may be what's happening to me, because there's no life situations really, honestly, that I can say I should be upset for no reason, on multiple occasions sometimes.
Yeah, but it's also looking at it kind of, again, I love the testing side, but I think as we get older, we do change. And again, getting emotional at certain situations that you previously haven't got emotional at before, I wouldn't necessarily is a bad thing, because I'm a bit like you, kind of, I'm very spiritual and kind of, I'm a big universe type of guy. And I think as we get older and mature, and I think especially over the last 5 to 10 years of my life, kind of from a situational standpoint, growing up, emotion was seen as a weakness. And we know this, and we can all say this on a call, and the nature of my life up until about 20 years old, emotion was a weakness. And I think stepping into a new era as I've got a little bit older, I find that I'm discovering and understanding and learning more about how to express emotion and what I'm actually feeling, that expressing emotions in the right way is. And just, there's a book, what's it called? It's Understanding Emotions. I'll get it and I'll link it for you guys. But How to Understand Emotions, I think it's called. But I wouldn't necessarily see that as a bad thing. So it may come back that your bloods are fine, testosterone and estrogen high, but it may come back that estrogen may be a little bit high. But I also, on the flip side of that coin, wouldn't necessarily see that as a bad thing. It's something different. And remember
if I can insert this. It's not even negative. The challenge around it for me is what I find is it chips away at my motivation.
Yeah.
Because if for some reason that, and again, speaking to others, if anybody goes through this, is that it slows down my motivation, or it sometimes it can even stop it. Because, if I'm just feeling that down for no reason, I'm like, you know what, maybe it's time for me to relax today. Maybe I'm a little down because I haven't had enough downtime. Because I will say this, and this is the last thing I'll add to this equation, is we've had a total spike in business. So our business is really doing well, which is very nice. And it's taken a huge amount of time, and it started growing right around the time a few months ago when I started this.
Sure, this,
So
yeah.
it's been, there's been a few bits and pieces, but like I say, around this, it was more questioning around, I guess, how to possibly learn to focus better in these situations and not let it sort of take me for that emotional ride that it feels tiring afterwards. Because it's something, like I say, that seems to be ongoing and irregular and unannounced.
Yeah, I think there's a few things we could look at with you mentioning about business. I think going back to what Ben talks about a lot is functional capacity. Obviously, your functional capacity over the last couple of months with this coinciding spike of business and then Greg asking you to do a lot more, your functional capacity has got a little bit less. So for me, I think understanding that those emotions can derail you, to me personally, that sounds like a little bit more of a maybe, and again, it's without the context, and Greg is obviously the best person to, and he's probably going to test this. It seems like a bit of a dopamine issue. So if we're looking at parts of the brain, we're looking at kind of the nucleus and we're looking at the VTA. So in regards to kind of dopamine, if you're finding that that's dropping significantly, and we've got the coinciding factor of your functional capacity being dramatically reduced, with work being busy and just your brain being overswamped with a lot of different things, I think kind of being able to compartmentalize and break those down so there isn't things like overwhelm, because what it sounds like to me is there could potentially be a little bit of overwhelm in there as well, which would be perfectly understandable with the nature of you starting this and that coinciding with business going through the roof as well. So I think just being able to, my answer to your question will be try to see if there is any sort of patterns to it in regards to timing of the week, when it is after a busy period at work, kind of, and if there is any kind of correlation to when this happens. Is it in an evening? Is it in a morning? And just, it sounds silly, but keep a mood diary. So write a mood diary. It might just be in your normal diary and kind of, again, motivation low. You might just write motivation low and see if there is any context or if there is some anything that kind of creeps up in regards to timing, when it is. And then obviously with Greg, you can start to run through it, because for me, it's always looking at patterns and it's trying to foresee patterns when somebody's experiencing something different. So being able to add a little bit more context, I think, will help.
Yeah, I'm glad you said the word pattern, because I'll finish on this note. Is my partner and I talk about this just recently about how our patterns are delegating how successful our life is, and one of the things that we just came across, as I mentioned with business, we've been able to step back at the same time and let other people operate, but there's still a lot of behind the scenes work. So I think that with all of this new, it probably makes sense that a little overwhelm, a little less dopamine, because I don't have. I'm excited about business and everything, but there's not much other excitement in my life right now. So it's very possible that, yes, business is nice. It's nice to be, fattening up our bank account, but also too, there's not a ton of excitement in my life right now.
And I think going back to a couple of talks that I did in regards to identifying values. So I think finding if it's like you just said, it's nice to have to not worry from a financial standpoint, but it sounds to me like that's not really an issue to you in regards to kind of that doesn't make you happy. So I think going back to understanding kind of what really gets you going, because just seeing an extra row in your bank account, if it's not really important and one of your highest values, it's not going to give you that dopamine release. So now that you've got a bit more time, it might be you and your partner exploring what you guys enjoy. And I know it sounds silly, but getting things like a hobby and those sort of things that are going to have a natural increase in dopamine. Because what a lot of people do is when they earn a kind of a little bit of financial freedom, and I think everybody's goal is to earn that financial freedom, they realize that at the top of that, the only progression to that is earning more money. Whereas if you're earning enough and you're in a position where you don't have to worry too much about that, I think using your time to create a structure and views around kind of what actually do you enjoy, and reconnecting with yourself and your partner, and being able to kind of create a foolproof plan of things that you're going to explore and enjoy together that may again reinvigorate kind of that dopamine and alternatively give you something new to focus on that isn't kind of money, if that makes sense.
No, that does totally make sense. And that is almost, you know, and I think I said this to Ben last time, it's almost where I got to in my thought and listening to what other guys were saying as well, or other men were saying as well. And I think that, like I say, in looking at the whole picture now, it probably looks like something what you said, because I thought about being overwhelmed. We're quite busy right now. We don't have much time for fun. So there's no excitement. So there's no spike in any dopamine, because, you know, we're living day to day. It's nice to be comfy. But I think it's probably right. I got there that the extra zeros aren't making a big difference. So I think there's other changes. And this, by the way, because this is about building muscle. This is about building a program. It's all that as well. And I'm learning that it's very, very important to focus on this part too, because I find my motivation lately has not been there since we started. So I am glad that I'm hearing this part as well.
Yeah, because it's all, and I always say to a lot of my clients, Darren, the actual training element is a small part of the process. You hear Ben talk about it all the time. We are creating superhero men here, and kind of we've got to look at all facets of life. So we look at, again, not just the thing you're doing within the program, it's looking at things you do outside as well. And kind of when we look at areas of life, is so many, and success is not just one thing. It's a whole host of things. And what is success to me? Success is living your purpose. Like, with the greatest of respect to anybody else in their careers, I often say to people, I've not worked a day in the last 20 years of my life, because I've been in an industry that I get to help people on a day-to-day basis. Again, from a financial standpoint, I'm remunerated for it. So for me, it's kind of looking at all facets of life, kind of. It's not going down to a rabbit hole, because what a lot of people do is just focus solely on the training and the nutrition. But ultimately, kind of, then that bleeds into personal relationships, because they're so laser focused on one thing that they then lose time with partners and spouses and their children. They disconnect from friends and stuff. They stop doing things. So I think it's important that you look at all facets of life. And yes, you need laser focus, and the training, the nutrition, the lifestyle aspect of this is what's going to get you through the next 30, 40, 50 years of your life and be healthy, happy, and from a longevity standpoint. But you've got to look at all the cofactors that go alongside it to create real success. So success for me and transformational change means everything. And you live in, I use the view with some, the view sometimes we're trying to change old normals and create a new normal. Just bringing new habits and behaviors in that again replace old habits that don't serve us, and having that ability. And again, this is a great talk to be talking about, it is understanding and be very open and honest with yourself about what serves you and what doesn't. And again, if we understand what serves and what does from a brain standpoint and rewiring, we know what we should delete. And as human beings, we're very, very terrible at letting go of the things that don't serve us or being able to identify them. So hopefully, kind of by seeing it on paper and working with Greg, you're going to have the tools available to understand what serves you and what doesn't serve you as well.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. Cause that, like I say, that was helpful. There's something you said there about the letting go of old habits. And I think that's the process that I might be in, because, you know, I've said this from square one to Ben, to Greg, is that I'm not a person that switches the off switch. And I start completely living like a little lemming and doing the workouts, and everything, you know, is perfectly done at home, and business is you know, I'm never that person. I've never been that person. I like to actually work my way into things. So, glad that you almost said what I'd already started to think.
Yeah, no, you're human, Darren. And 90% of the people that we are, like, again, if you've listened to my 1% mindset, 1% mindset talk previously, of 3 or 4 weeks ago, you'd have heard that is change is incremental, kind of going from 0 to 100. Again, all that's going to do is lead us down a path of destruction where you're going to fail, because ultimately there's too much change too quickly. Some people can do it in a very small few, but when we look at sustainability and longevity, changing something so quickly often leads to relapse. It leads to people fall into bad habits, and understanding that change takes time. And when people have had unhealthy patterns for 20 years, they expect to be able to change those unhealthy patterns in 4 weeks, 6 weeks, which they potentially can for a short period of time, but the actual rewiring that needs to be done in the brain hasn't happened. So it's going to take time, and it's going to take those small incremental steps for you to make significant changes that are going to stick, because anybody can make a change for 4 to 6 weeks, but can you make changes that are going to be sustainable for the rest of your life? And that's what the process is about. It's about understanding that just being 1% better each week, just this week being better than last, is a goal of what we're trying to achieve. And then moving towards that kind of 100%, and just knowing that there is going to be challenges, there's going to be road bumps. But how you deal and tackle with those, how you compartmentalize them, and kind of allow yourself, going back to what I said earlier, kind of how you perceive those in your brain, are going to be vitally important. Because a lot of people, one slight derailment and they fall totally off course, when ultimately, if you can understand why you derailed, be able to add context to that and ensure that it doesn't happen again and you learn from that, that's the most important thing.
That's great. Thank you.
No worries, Darren. Pleasure, buddy. Right. So breaking down barriers. So exactly what we've just been talking about with Darren. So the two main things when I look at breaking down barriers, you heard me say earlier about limiting beliefs. Okay. So we all have self-limiting beliefs. I talked a little bit earlier about things like comparison. So social media is the worst for it. A lot of you guys potentially look on social media. I could never, that person's doing this, whether it be work, whether it be physique, any of those sort of things. We all live with limiting beliefs, okay? There can be, I'm not strong enough. I'll never succeed. The adage, I'm not good at this. They're all beliefs that typically, 9 times out of 10, will originate from past experiences or societal pressures. So understanding these and being able to identify where they've come in, it might have been, again, soccer, you might have been past, pick last at soccer when you was youngster. You might have been not good enough to get into a sporting team that you wanted to, or a running club, etc. So understanding that self-imposed limitations are just that, they're self-imposed, they're not anything that kind of are factually true, okay? And being able to decipher what's thought and what's fact is going to be vital to you rewiring your brain and kind of understanding how you do things different. So kind of for me, limiting beliefs are what hold people back. And a lot of it is tied around fear. And I talk a lot about fear in every human action that we kind of impart is dictated by fear, okay? And it's solely fear is something that in our brain that protects us, okay? But I always ask the question, when often, if you think about everything you've done in your life and you've feared, which will be a lot of situations, how often have you put off something and feared it, and then when you've actually actioned it, it's ever been as bad as you thought it was going to be? The answer to that is never. So this is what I'm talking about in regards to self-limiting beliefs and being able to identify them and turn them into strengths as you move forward as well. And then also kind of the physical impact. So these mental barriers don't just affect your mood. They can also affect your physical performance. So again, going back to what Darren just said, when you're stuck in a little bit of a cycle of self-doubt and low motivation, your body's going to respond by limiting capabilities, okay? So for me, understanding these two parts to breaking down barriers is the self-limiting beliefs, which is psychological, and then the physical impact that these have in regards to kind of hindering physical performance, and understanding how that fear and that self-doubt can sometimes limit your body's capabilities. So not going for the heaviest set that's in your program because it looks too heavy. So you often hear a lot of quote-unquote bodybuilders on kind of social media say that kind of, oh, you should go into workouts fearing your sets. Again, I believe a little bit around that. But again, if you're not challenging, you're not changing. So seeing kind of seeing the physical impact and ensuring that those mental barriers don't signify kind of something that's going to impair you when you go to training. And quite often when I program the anaerobic work, the aerobic work, that people kind of don't go hard enough because it's fear that stops them. But we as human beings and our bodies are capable of so much more than we think. There'll be a lot of people on this call that are lifting weights or doing movements that they never thought they'd be doing. And again, that's a prime example of kind of how certain barriers can hinder performance and hinder that rewiring process as well. So rewiring strategies. So for me, this is the actionable part. So it's, again, how do we rewire our brain? These for me are probably the biggest four strategies that we can utilize and we can implement pretty much instantly from today to start to rewire how we perceive things, how we our perception of things, and how we can use our brain as a strength. Again, adding a little bit to it, this is not talking about nutrition. Obviously, nutrition and those sort of things are going to be vitally important alongside these mental strategies, but these are the four most important things that I think we should focus on. So again, the first one is visualization. So those of you have all got coaches, okay, your coaches with you on that first session and your first intake call, and then at the start of every month, they're going to essentially going to allow you to visualize and create the plan. So using your tracker, you've got your goals for this month, for the next 6 months, et cetera, et cetera. So what that's doing is creating visualization. So it's allowing you to imagine yourself achieving your goals. So quite often people have got a predisposed goal when they come here. And especially with my clients, what I try to do is over-succeed that, because quite often people don't understand what they're capable of. So when you do start to visualize this success and you allow yourself to think, well, maybe I can get here. Maybe I can add that 10 pounds of muscle and get down to 10% body fat or get abs, for instance. What your brain's going to start to do, it's going to start to build the neural pathways required for that success. So for me, visualization is a big tool. And kind of, you've heard the phrase in regards to goal setting, kind of set goals that scare you, right? And a lot of you have heard that from business. And it's the same with everything you're trying to achieve. And that is just a prime example of visualization. So next time you're exercising, kind of, for me, kind of, What I typically do is kind of imagine how I want a set to look. And I'm, before I go into a workout, I'm looking at my work and I'm just visualizing what I want to get out. So I've looked at my numbers from a previous week. And what I'm trying to make sure is essentially I've got a set of numbers that I want to beat. And then moving forward, kind of, I've got a goal to hit. So I'm visualizing what I'm going to achieve in that specific session before it's happened. Okay. So for me, visualization is probably one of the biggest rewiring strategies that we're going to have. The second one is going to be affirmations. Okay, so going back to what we said earlier on in the talk is replacing that negative self-talk with positive affirmations. So it's going to sound silly, but those of you that have done affirmations kind of know how powerful they are. So repeating phrases like, I'm strong, I'm capable, I overcome challenges every day. So I'm a big proponent with all of my clients in regards to affirmations, okay, and journaling, because kind of actually writing something down and speaking it into existence is a powerful thing. I see us as human beings, we are very much all big bundles of cells, big bundles of energy. You look at the billions of cells that's in our body. Every single one of them contain energy, right? So kind of for me, speaking things into existence are super important. Because quite often you wake up and your brain's trying to trick you. And remember what I said at the start of the call, our brain is negatively biased. Okay, so from a protection mechanism, it's not going to allow us to try and foresee things that we are actually truly capable of. So using positive affirmations, again, are going to help to reinforce new neural pathways, making a positive mindset second nature. So to begin with, going back to what I just said, kind of change isn't easy. If change was easy, everybody would be doing it. But again, practicing affirmations every day and again, allowing it to become a habit is going to ensure that we make that positive mindset second nature. The third point is mindfulness and meditation. So I'm a big proponent, no matter where you are, whether you're in the gym, okay, at home with your family, or you're at work, The biggest thing I can say from a mindfulness is be present. Okay. A lot of so many people in today's society, Gen Z, Gen X, kind of are stuck to their phones. I see it all the time when I visit gyms in and around here. Okay. They're not present in the workout. The only time I will ever get my phone out in the gym is typically to change song on my AirPods. Okay. And that's the only time my phone will ever, I'm present in every single rep of every single set of my workout. Again, I would hope and I would imagine that, let's say 90% of you on this call cannot say that. And that's not an attack. That's just fact, because you may have work on your mind. You may have a meeting after your workout. Oh, I've got to get done in time for this, that, etc. Or I've got to pick the kids up, or I wonder what I'm eating for food next. So we, again, as normal human nature, it allows us to kind of allow our brain to kind of sway and go away from a task. But if I can say one thing about mindfulness, it's being present, and be present in every situation. You heard me speak to George at the start of the call, kind of him having that hour at the start of the day, or whenever he trains, is that's his hour. He don't think about business. He don't think about his wife, the kids, family, what he's got to do today. That hour is his hour of meditation. I like to call my training time meditation, because it's an hour that I don't have to think about another soul in the whole wide world. And I just focus on me and my progression. So mindfulness, again, it could be a short meditation you can do. It can be breathing exercises. This practice itself is going to reduce stress and increase clarity. So again, for me, mindfulness and being present is super important. So just doing a few minutes a day at the start of the day, at the end of the day, when you're training, again, can recalibrate your brain and set the stage for you to create an extra level of that mental resistance that's required. And then fourth and final is goal setting. Okay, so it's so important to set clear and actionable goals. So for those of you guys, going back to Darren, and he will have done this with Coach Greg at the start of his process, is you've all got goals for life, whether it be financial goals for business, children and family and housing, those sort of things. But what people are very poor at is getting very clear on goals when it comes to health and fitness. And I'm a big believer that the body that we have is the vessel that's going to carry and allow us to complete the goals outside of the fitness realm. So I put a post out today on social media, and the caption very much the caption said, a healthy man has many goals, a sick man has one. Okay. And that, again, feeds nicely into this goal setting, is kind of make sure your goals around your health, lifestyle, and longevity are as clear as your goals for what you want to do from a business and a family standpoint, because this is the vessel that you've been given. And if this vessel isn't healthy, it's going to have a hindrance in other areas of your life. And if you haven't got health, you can't perform at the top level in other areas of your life, which is going to all be defined by your goals. So outlining your objectives, your brain's going to start to align your actions with these goals. And what that's going to do is essentially create that focused path towards success. Okay, so they're the four rewiring strategies that kind of I'd like us to focus on, and that can massively help. Okay, and just applying the neuroscience to strength training is a slide that I wanted to put in. So again, you guys have all heard us talk about mind muscle connection. So I'm a big believer that exercise is two pronged. I always, and those of you guys that have heard me speak, have seen me in Costa Rica or any of the retreats that we do, kind of, I say exercise is two pronged. There's an external movement and an internal dialogue. The external movement is the exercise that you're doing. So it might be the machine, the dumbbells, the barbell, etc. But the internal dialogue is, what are you talking to yourself about? What are you saying that you want out of every inch of this rep? Are you visualizing the muscle that you're using, both contracting and relaxing, lengthening and shortening through every single rep? And are you intimately connected with every one of the reps in this set? Because that's how training should be. And again, from a neural patterning perspective, remember, a muscle contraction starts in the brain. So the signal has to be sent from your brain to my elbow to flex and create a bicep curl. So understand how important mind muscle connection and thinking and internalizing exercise is to ensure we continue making progression. And then the last point is building resilience. Okay, so going back to what I said at the start of the call, you'll have heard Ben talk about the four resiliences. Okay, so physical resilience, metabolic resilience, physiological resilience, and psychological resilience are all so important when it comes to everything that we're trying to achieve with you guys here at Muscle Intelligence. Okay, so mental toughness is something that's built over time, again, but the only way that can be built is through consistent practice and overcoming setbacks and challenges. You heard me say a second ago, kind of, I want my clients to perceivably fail. I want my clients to perceivably do something wrong, because once we understand how to deal with setbacks, that's going to allow us to build that mental toughness and, most importantly, reinforce that resilient mindset. And a mind without challenge, again, when faced with challenge, often fails. So looking at setbacks and things that we previously haven't done right or we've not succeeded at is going to be vitally important to building that mental resilience that's required to continue improving those neural pathways of the brain, of all the aforementioned parts of our brain as well. So again, yes, it does come down to perception. It comes down to everything that we've spoken about in regards to mindset itself, but constant action. I talk to my guys all the time about consistency. In this process, in all areas of your life, the most successful people in the world, if you look at one common theme between them all, and that could be training, nutrition, business, one thing they all are is consistent. Okay. And consistency will reign in every area of their life. And if there's one thing that we can get better at, because a lot of people don't give the physical realm, so the training and nutrition, the same due attention they do the family, the business, and kind of the industry that they're working in, which, as I mentioned a second ago, it's just, I believe it's just as important, because again, without an optimally functioning vessel, it's going to make those jobs a whole lot harder. So building mental resilience through challenge is going to be super important to kind of allow us to rewire our brain somewhat from a resiliency standpoint. Okay, so moving into the last couple of slides. So I'm going to click over these a little bit quicker just because of timing, but I wanted to put a couple of success stories up here. So these are two of my clients, Jason, who's in Hawaii, and Luke, who's in London. Both of them come from different sides of the spectrum in regards to psychological challenge. So Jason's on the left, was in a job that he absolutely hated this. He was in tech and he was very successful, but hated his job. Okay, so his self efficacy, self motivation, how he felt himself, and he's not in bad shape on the left-hand side by all means, but kind of his whole psychological pattern, and he was very negative. Okay, and through practicing all the things that we've spoken about today, we've started to kind of flip the whole half cup empty to half cup full. So with Jason, it was very much about reframing his perception of his life. And now, obviously, still in the shape he is in on the right, kind of is happy, is healthy, he's changed careers. It's not come as a consequence to his financial goals. And essentially, he's from a transformational standpoint, yes, he's in good shape, but kind of how he operates mentally on a day-to-day basis is so much better. And then obviously Luke. Luke won't mind me telling you from his backstory, he was bullied as a kid. Kind of, there was a lot of trauma in there, which we worked with therapists and those sort of things, and a lot of things that kind of hung over him into his early adult life, and kind of his self-confidence and everything was rock bottom. But through, I mean, I worked with Luke for, and I still work with Luke, and I've worked with him now for 2.5 years. We managed to get him in front of a camera. And Luke was probably one of the shyest guys that I've ever met. And at the start of the process, in the picture you see on the left, would have ne if would they, those photos took me on the left. I think it took 5 weeks for him to feel comfortable taking a starting photo for me. So that was 5 weeks into our journey. And then the guy on the right-hand side is posing in front of a camera, a friend of mine's photography studio, with his ads out, with a tan on, shaved, etc. And that's all through, again, creating psychological strategies to overcome the demons that people have in their head, and kind of the struggles that people have from a whole host of things: motivation, low self-efficacy, low self-worth, and understanding that kind of the only thing from stopping you from achieving the goals that you want to in life are going to be what's between your ears, and that's your brain. And once we start to rewire your brain, again, most of you guys starting this call are uber successful in some area of life. And if we can apply that same methodology and break the shackles of not being able to apply it to what goes on within muscle intelligence, then all you guys are going to be anyway, but are going to be super success stories. Okay, so 4 points in creating your action plan. So what I'd like to do is I like to give these calls something to allow us just to create an action plan. So your personal action plan, number one, reflect. So think about your current limiting beliefs, what negative thoughts are holding you back, and I want you to write them down. Okay. So after that, I want you to set goals. So again, set one goal related to both a mental and physical growth. Okay, so it might be something like I will practice a 5-minute mindfulness meditation every morning for the next week. It might be something related into kind of catching yourself and understanding the fat versus salt when the demons start to creep in. Is it perception in a relationship around certain situations? And it might be an argument with a spouse or something like that, but essentially kind of start to set goals respective to the limiting beliefs or kind of a situation that you find yourself. Okay, then implement strategies. So choose one of the four techniques from today, whether it be visualization, affirmations, mindfulness, and commit to practicing it daily if you're not already. Okay, and again, using and speak with your coach using your tracker, essentially add it to your daily tracker. So a lot of my guys that are on here know that I've got gratitude in there, I've got mindfulness and those sort of things. It's a vital part of what I do with my guys. Okay, but using your daily tracker to allow yourself to commit to it every single day is going to be vitally important. So implement one of the strategies and then track your progress. And then the fourth thing is just commit. So again, going back to my 1% mindset talk a few weeks ago, just take a moment and decide on one small change you're going to implement this week and action it. Okay. And then next week, add another one. And the week after, add another one. So looking at that theory of being 1% better each week is going to be vitally important. And again, think about compound interest. I've said it many a times on these calls. One turns to two, turns to four, turns to eight. And if you give it a good 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, how you will be looking at things from a rewiring perspective in 6 months' time is going to be significantly different, but you've got to commit and you've got to action it. There's got to be intention around it, and you've 100% got to commit to it. So that's create. That's what we from a creating action plan. So reflect, set goals, implement strategies, and then commit. Okay. So last slide tonight, just a summary of the key points. Okay, so the mind is a powerful tool that shapes your reality both physically and mentally. Through neuroplasticity, you have a power to rewire your brain, creating new neural pathways for both strengths and success. Using daily practices like visualization techniques, affirmations, mindfulness, and in particular, goal setting and staying accountable to that is going to lead to long-lasting change. And then remember the 1% mindset talk, every small step counts. If you haven't watched my 1% mindset talk, it was 3 or 4 weeks ago. Just go into the academy and you should be able to watch it. And then last part, I encourage you all to start implementing one of these strategies today. Thank you for your time, participation, and I hope you all feel a little bit stronger and essentially you have a lot to take away from today. So that's it for me today. I'm going to open the floor up to you guys. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now. After hearing the last few slides, is there any questions or is anybody kind of care to share any of their limiting beliefs that they may have or they're going to be trying to implement from today? I'm going to pick on one of you, definitely. I'm not going to pick on you. You've just unmuted, Darren, so go on. I wasn't going to allow you to speak, but
No, I was just going
go
to just finish up with I'm a talker. First of all, you'll figure that out.
yeah I
Pretty
know
quick
look
on these
so much I'm British, so am I. I'm told anybody get a word in edgeways on these calls. I just want to speak for the
Oh, believe me, my partner tells me all the time I can't get a word in
hour.
ever. So I get that. No, I was just going to say, the struggle that I have personally is probably the very last part that you mentioned, which was definitively committing. That I can plan the strategy. I mean, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I was a coach for 25 years, but I've left it quite some time ago. But with that being said, I know all the rules. I know, but I've been able to passively commit. And I think that is where, that's why I was very interested in this mind work about it, because that's really where a lot of my thought process goes now is I don't look at anything like a problem anymore. It might be a challenge that just requires a remedy. But that's very new for me in the last few years of my life. I had a very, very wild life when I was younger, my first 45 years probably. So now that I'm pushing 60, that now I'm just more in tune with following this protocol. So I'm, but if there's any advice anyone can add in the last few minutes about just the power of commitment and any little tidbits that you can add, that would be great.
My first question will be, what are you scared of? What are you scared of? Why won't you commit? What's the fear that what do you fear that will happen if you commit?
What would be my fear? I don't think my fear is any different than anyone else a lot of the time. It's the fear of having that success. Like it's the fear of, like, I've competed twice in my life, and my first coach who brought me through that cycle, I still doubted myself all the way through that whole thing. But I think what was the point I was going to make about that? What's my fear? I think ultimately to be the center of attention, because I've it's funny. Through the years, I think all of us feel like people with big personalities feel like the center of attention. But I was always very shy in there. So I think that, like I say, at the end of the day, I think my fear. I think that's as easy as I can say it. I'm actually, I think, fearful mostly of the success of doing it, and
Yeah,
maybe just.
I would 100%. It's your fear of succeeding, and understand that kind of even being a bodybuilder, because again, being surrounded by bodybuilders for the last 15 years, one thing I understand very quickly: a lot of people bodybuild. A lot of people bodybuild because they have low self-efficacy, low self-worth, and it's for the validation aspect to feel something.
For
Okay,
sure.
so for me, with you, Darren, what I'd say is it is very much a fear of succeeding. You, and again, going back to why you probably got into, because if you was a shy guy, you got into competing for that very fact, because you didn't want to be the center of attention, but you may have required subconsciously the validation that came with it. You didn't like it, but just that feeling of having it, I think is one. And one of my biggest strengths is I'm in very good shape. But kind of I never I'm not really a validation person. I've never done photo shoots. I stay in relatively good shape year round. But for me, my power is it's me versus me. And I always say to them, I've had people that competed and done really well in competitions before. But my initial interview for them is, why are you doing this? Because if it's for validation, then we're not competing. We need to work on the psychological aspect of this journey way before you even think about stepping on stage. Because all that stepping on stage is going to do, if you don't win, you don't get the validation that you require, it's just going to create a whole host of problems psychologically moving forward. When they start to reverse back out of a diet and they're only lean for that 2 hours that they're competing. I hate my body. I feel fat, and they never kind of regain. And they lose a lot more than they gain for competing. So for you, buddy, I think it is simply a case of you're kind of fearful of actually succeeding, because you know that you can. You've been on stage a couple of times, you've got in great shape, so you know it's within you. But potentially, and another thing that we may look at is it might be your link to what it was like and how difficult it was to get lean last time. Because I would imagine for a bodybuilding show, and I'm speculating here, you had to really aggressively diet, and kind of it took a lot out of your life to get that lean, and kind of it's a grueling task to get on stage. Whereas if I told you today that alongside one of the best coaches in MI, Coach Greg, a good friend of mine, that you can achieve that same level of results, you may have to compromise a small bit of your kind of lifestyle for certain periods and total abstinence, but you can get to relatively close to where you was at competing and maintain it most of the year round and still live pretty much the same quality of life, the positive points of the quality of life that you've got now. That sounds very appealing, right? But
Oh,
potentially,
no, for sure.
it was around how you did it the first couple of times round and how difficult and how grueling. And let's face it, bodybuilding is probably the most selfish sport that is around. And Ben will tell you this. But we can get, well, Coach Greg can get you into the same shape that you had prior to that, albeit without the negative side effects that have, and potentially, I'm just speculating here, and the med negative associations that have been built up from your first two attempts all those years ago.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, there's a lot, or a little bit of a lot of what you said. A little bit of each part of what you said definitively was there, and I'm very sure it was about validation. Very sure. Now, the second one that I did when I was 49 years old, but I did it after donating a kidney to said coach I mentioned, and having an ileostomy. So
Amazing.
I've had two major things happen, and then I competed. So that was more challenging myself. So the second time was definitely more
Props to you,
positive.
man. That's amazing. That's amazing. That's amazing. Like
Well, I'd
the
like to that's my I think my fear is that I did it for the wrong reasons, I think, both times. Now I actually just want to be in really great shape. So I don't want to dominate here, please, guys, if anybody else has
Oh
something.
no, it's fine, mate. It's great. It's great. It's great to hear. I love to hear it. And Des loves to listen as well. Des loves Des Des he sits here, he don't say much, but he's taking everything in. Yeah, no, I think kind of for you it is. And I think every question I ask is you have all the tools to commit. You as a coach for 25 years, you know what to do. And kind of the reality is, I know it sounds very simple, but just do it. It's as simple as that, and kind of there is no limitations. The only limitations that you have in not being able to do it is, as I said earlier, what's between your ears, and it's a belief
No,
system you've
absolutely. After
that kind of
this, like after this, sorry to interrupt there. After this, because I was looking forward to this, and funny, Matt had messaged about it, and I thought it was yesterday's, like which number, and it was actually from a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, all that to say that is why I wanted to attend this, because again, it's processes I'm already thinking about, so it's nice, first of all, to have them sort of backed up, and second of all, just to be able to say that. To be able to say to get there, that's likely what's probably happening is fear of success. I did it for the wrong reasons. Will I be able to do it for the right reason this time? Being passive about my commitment levels, because I guess, for lack of a better word, maybe I've just been easily pleased lately. So the fact that I'm training again and the fact that I'm eating well again, I'm happy about that. But I know now in doing this part, I'm realizing actually, I think I actually do want more. So if Matt's is on and listening and that kind of thing, we talked about that I realize that I'm the only one that can motivate that.
100%. It's understanding as well. Go back to what I said earlier in the talk. It's fact versus thought. Okay. And what you're going through, the thought is, can I do that? Can I do that? That's the thought. But the actual fact is, you did it at 49 and you've already done it. So you've been there. So the facts are, you can do it and you can do it because you've done it twice already. You're not trying to get into shape for the first time. So again, that's what I'm talking about perception. It's fact versus thought. The thought is, oh, can I get there again? When the reality and the actual only factual thing is, well, I've been there. Of course I can. So it is just doing it. And the benefit to this is I speak to Greg pretty much every day. So I'm going to be checking on you. I'm going to be checking on you, Darren. If you come off this call and I speak to Greg tomorrow and he's not said to me, Darren's message after the call and he's on it, then I'm going to come and find you, buddy. I'm going to come and find you.
I have messaged in today already, just so you know, because I finally dropped below my starting weight. So
Amazing.
it's just was a
Great
little
news.
lot. So
So
I'll leave it there.
it's already started then, mate. It's already started.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you.
Perfect.
Appreciate it.
How are you, Richard? You well? Yeah, you're good. Well, thank you, guys. Have you got anything to add, Des?
No, I'm good, Danny. It's a
Good.
great session.
Perfect. Well, guys, as always, like I said, if there is any questions, and those of you guys that aren't listening to this, if you have got any questions about anything that I've spoken to today, then please do just drop me a message. But thank you for you guys that are attending, and thank you for the guys that are going to be listening to this on repeat. I hope this has been helpful to you guys, and I look forward to seeing you guys all in 3 or 4 weeks or so. Take care, guys.